Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Since the days of the Romans, one day a year has been set aside for harmless pranks and jokes. In fact, the Romans called that day Hilaria, the day we now refer to as April Fool's Day. So on this week's Louisiana Eats, we're setting out to celebrate that day with some hilaria of our own. Dr. Bill Shutt explores the topic of cannibalism, something he calls a perfectly natural history. We'll visit with a culinary clairvoyant and a magician who calls himself the Foodie Magish. Then we'll go on a high-speed hunting trip with Chef Isaac Toops. How does April Fool's Day figure in? Suffice it to say that this week's guests are so filled with outlandish tales, you may have a hard time believing their stories. But in fact, they're all true. Except for one. It's up to you to try and ferret the truth from the fiction on this week's Louisiana Eats.
Hi, my name is Bill Shutt, and I'm a zoologist and biology professor at LIU Post in New York, and my book is Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History.
Cannibalism is no longer a thing of the past. Once associated with desperate pioneers trying to reach the West Coast, this foodie trend is taking off, at least according to New York-based writer Bill Shutt. Here at Louisiana Eats, we're always vying to be ahead of the curve. So I made a call to Bill to get the full story on a truly humanist cuisine.
I think that when you hear the word cannibalism, you have a knee-jerk reaction. And that is, you're either thinking about people stranded in the Andes or the Donner Party, or you're thinking of criminal cannibalism like Jeffrey Dahmer. And as a zoologist, what I learned and what I want my readers to now know is that there's a lot of material that has to do with cannibalism that doesn't have to do with any of that. Whether it's in the animal kingdom, cannibalism functions for things as strange as parental care or a reproductive strategy. And then once you get into humans, the types of cannibalism that I looked at, besides the obvious ones, had to do with things like ritual cannibalism and medicinal cannibalism.
It's fascinating. Now, you devote some time talking about the people of the Caribbean, Mexico, and Central America. And There was a lot of cannibalism reality for various reasons, but there was also a lot of cannibalism lore, wasn't there?
Sure. I think this is one of the more interesting parts of the book, and people are in a sense surprised to hear this, is that folks like Columbus used the term cannibalism as a way to dehumanize the people that he met. On his first trip to the New World, for example, he described these Amerindians called Amerax, and he said that they were very nice and they were fit to be working for the queen. And what he found out was that, well, he was actually there looking for gold. And when he didn't find gold, he started looking for another resource. And that resource turned out to be humans. And so Queen Isabella told him, listen, if these are nice people, if these people are kind, then you need to treat them with humanity. But if they happen to be cannibals, then all bets are off. So lo and behold, what a coincidence. Visits 2, 3, and 4, those voyages, were more like armed occupations than they were voyages of discovery. And all of these groups that were initially stated to be nice folks were suddenly these animal cannibals, and so they could be treated in really harsh ways. And so I'm not trying to say that cannibalism did not occur in these groups, because it might have, and it might have occurred for reasons that were probably ritual, might have had to do with their warfare. But it was also used as a way to sort of designate other groups as subhuman, so that, and if that was the case, you could really do anything you wanted to them. And this happened throughout the New World.
Some of them did actually use it, though, as a way to terrorize their enemies.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, in warfare. It was also used as in funerary rites. Instead, you know, culture is king. It's all what your culture dictates is the right thing. They'd never learned about burying their dead, and a lot of these groups were just as mortified to learn that Westerners put their dead into the ground to rot and be eaten by worms. Yeah, and they were like, "What? Are you kidding me?" Well, probably not using those words, but why wouldn't you want to consume your dead loved ones and incorporate them into you? And so they were just as surprised at that type of behavior. And it's something that we'd never get in the West, because for thousands of years now, since the time of the ancient Greeks, we've been told and learned through the Greeks and the Romans, William Shakespeare, the Brothers Grimm, Daniel Defoe with Robinson Crusoe, that the worst thing that you could do to another person is to cannibalize him. And so these groups that did not get that line, they developed other rituals and other beliefs that were quite different in many instances. And probably a lot less cannibalism took place in these indigenous groups than has initially been reported by anthropologists. You know, we use a very different and more stringent set of evidence now before we go calling people cannibals. In the old days, if you found bones that had cut marks on them, it was automatically assumed that you were dealing with cannibals. That is not the case nowadays.
Well, they even had a studied opinion on who tasted best. So how did that go back then? Who got to eat and who got eaten?
Well, I think that in a lot of instances, very poor people got eaten, young people, women.
They really had a taste for children, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, and it sort of makes sense. You know, if you think about eating lamb versus eating an old steer, it's really the same thing when you talk about what the meat would be like. You know, you're going to get tougher meat with somebody who's been around a while than you would consuming somebody that's younger.
Well, that's going on way, way in the East. But in Europe, tell me about the times when and what their thoughts were behind medicinal cannibalism.
Sure. This was maybe the biggest surprise for me in the entire book. You know, with the animals, it was just how widespread cannibalism was in the animal kingdom. But for humans, the real surprise to me when I started to do the research on this book was how common medicinal cannibalism was for hundreds of years throughout Europe, starting in the Middle Ages, rolling right through the Renaissance, and lasting right up until the early 20th century. Just about every body part that you can imagine, from skulls and bones to fat and blood and guts, were prepared in any way that you can consider, from being dried out to being mixed with alcohol, all sorts of potions made, in order to treat all sorts of various diseases. And so this was a real surprise, given the Western taboo that these people had. But when it came to medicinal cannibalism, from kings to commoners, everybody was eating body parts for hundreds of years. And probably the last vestiges of that are now, you know, a relatively few folks who believe, in the United States primarily, that consuming placenta has a medicinal value. It's sort of an alternative medicine.
Well, I just personally don't have the stomach for getting into the placenta helper today. But... But I did. I think everybody would have expected you to touch on the Donner Party. I love it that you called that chapter the worst party ever, I'll say. But you went to great lengths to research and discover what was the truth and what had really happened with the Donner Party and what was merely legend.
Right. So what was a surprise was that so much new material was coming out. And I guess I just got really lucky, because at the time when I started to research the Donners, there was this big media hubbub about, you know, there were all sorts of headlines saying that the truth is out. The Donner Party weren't cannibals. They ate their, you know, they might have eaten their pets and their livestock, but there's no proof that cannibalism existed. And I went, what, really? So I contacted some Donner Party researchers, and I said, "Is this true?" And they just kind of, as collectively, they just shook their heads, and they were like, "No, no, 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 no." This was unfortunately what happened was that a school PR department released some really preliminary findings of one of their professors who had been on an archaeological dig at one of the Donner Party sites, and didn't find human bones in this one site, and they jumped to the conclusion that this was proof that cannibalism didn't exist with the Donners, that it never took place. In reality, it took place in four different sites, and there was no doubt at all about it. But now these researchers are still sort of having to deal with the fact that the media came out with these statements that were completely wrong.
Do you think that cannibalism is likely to be viewed differently in the future? You know, there are all the zombies. There's all these things that we see now in movies and on TV. How do you see the current state and the future of cannibalism?
Well, what a great question. You know, cannibalism, like vampirism, is always, I think, going to stimulate people, cause them to have a shiver. And then once again, I think this is 2,000 years worth of learning that cannibalism is the worst taboo that you can undertake. So it's going to take a long time, I think, for people to think differently. And I'm not trying with this book to tell people that cannibalism isn't horrible and that there hasn't been a lot of suffering and pain because of it. What I'm trying to get across is that there are other stories out there that don't necessarily fit in with what we've learned about cannibalism.
Well, we're facing climate change and great unrest on the planet. Do you think that those words, Soylent Green, are going to ever really make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for your listeners out there, that was a 1973 science fiction flick with Charlton Heston where the seas had died and supposedly they were making these biscuits, and they were actually using people who turned themselves in once they reached old age. Yeah, and so, I mean, I really don't see anything like that happening. To me, the real problem is as it's been in the past, where you're dealing with famines in places where it's going to be difficult to bring in aid because of, say, armed factions that might be too dangerous to bring in aid workers or medicinal people. And, you know, we're living in a world where we're reading about famines and starvation on a daily basis. And so it's not science fiction to me that in some of these instances that people might resort to cannibalism. I think it's predictable behavior. I'm not pro-cannibalism. I'm just saying that as a scientist, and scientists have looked at this, it is a natural step in the starvation process that at a certain point when there's no food, you're either going to die or you're going to eat the dead.
The history of the world, my love.
Save a lot of graves, do a lot of relatives' favors.
Is those below serving those up above?
Bill Shutt, author of Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History.
That goes above the surface down below.
Now let me see. We've got
the ability to survive in the wilderness is something that Chef Isaac Toops takes enormous pride in.
I could hunt you animals, grow you crops, cure the animals, cook the animals, tan their hides.
It sometimes seems as though there's very little the Top Chef star can't do. And that includes taking on new challenges, like trying his hand at high-speed game hunting in Woodville, Mississippi.
Or like the locals say, Woolville. Ooh, Woolville?
I'll let Isaac take it from here.
So this is the last hunt of deer season. I haven't shot a deer. I'm pretty aggravated. I hadn't even shot my gun besides sighting it in. So, a bunch of rabbits. We were coming back from the trail. Brother picked me up. I'm riding. He's like, "You know what? I'm going to shoot a rabbit." He's like, "You're going to hit a rabbit." I'm like, "I know I'm not going to hit a rabbit. Like, I'm not really that good of a shot with a pistol anyway." Anyway, so I was like, "I'm just going to shoot at one. And, you know, I'm not going to shoot one across my brother." So I'm like, "Wait for one of the roots." Like, "Oh, look, there's one." Boom. We're going like 20 miles an hour. Like, "You didn't hit that." I'm like, "I know I didn't hit it." We come up to it. Rabbit's dead with a hole through it. He's just like, drop dead. We're like, "Oh my God." Moving four-wheeler, moving rabbit, with a pistol, and Wyatt Earp came out and took him down. Pretty proud of myself. It saved the season. Like, didn't kill a deer, but I Wyatt Earped a rabbit. So I took that rabbit, skinned it, because, you know, I'm going to shoot some, I'm going to eat it. We cooked it down in bacon and tomato. It's the only things we had left at the camp. The hunters were shocked at how good this was. You know, I'm a chef, don't worry. So the bacon and the tomato, it's like, this is the best rabbit I've ever had. I'm like, actually, it came out really good. And I took the hide and spread it out, nailed it, salted it, and then reduced my own urine in a beer can and painted that on. It's natural cure. You ever heard the term before? That comes from people actually selling their to the tanneries to reduce for curing hides. Still done across the world. I knew that and then brought it home and made my wife a purse with that rabbit hide. My wife has never taken that purse outside of this house and gave it to my daughter. I was fairly offended.
Professional chef and amateur rabbiteer, Isaac Toobs.
Country boy, got a shaggy dog. Country boy, up a holler log. Well, he comes in a run when you pick up your gun, and with a shell or two and your dog at you. When you get your rabbit, you'll skin his hide. He's gonna be good fried country boy.
When we come back from a short break, we'll be joined by Janie Beauclair, the culinary clairvoyant. You don't want to miss this, so stay tuned. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Ralph's on the Park, featuring Chef Chip Flanagan's globally influenced New Orleans cuisine overlooking City Park. Lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, and private events at 900 City Park Avenue in New Orleans, Mid-City. If you're just joining us, today's Louisiana Eats is designed to have you guessing. Is that a true tale, or is it an April Fool's joke? Don't worry, by the end of the show, all will be revealed.
I am Janie Beauclair, the clairvoyant gourmet.
True believers talk about a sixth sense, but what about psychic power, so real you can taste it? When we phoned culinary clairvoyant Janie Beauclair, she immediately marveled us with a vision of our studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
So when you said where you were, as soon as you said where you were, I got a vision of a variety of old-time cast iron stoves, different cooking items, as in like old-time kitchen things. Is that the type of stuff that's in there?
Uncanny. After this spot-on reading, Janie basically had us hypnotized. I just had a few more questions. Janie, what's your earliest memory of having one of these experiences?
Kindergarten, actually. I definitely remember having conversations with three women that had crossed over, and my mom saying to me, "Who are you talking to?" And I told her that I was talking to my friends on the other side. And she thought they were my imaginary friends. And I remember having a clear conversation with them. And it was actually about cooking, because I had a little Susie Bake oven. And we were talking about something that I wanted to make. It was about recipes. And so that was my very first conversation that I actually remember. And it was based around the kitchen, which is interesting, because now, at this age in my life, most of my readings have food flavor within them and have a lot of kitchen connection to them. And as I got into my 20s and 30s, I realized how powerful it was as a healing tool. And so I got really excited about being able to help other people heal through through connecting them to the other side.
How did your life evolve? How did this become your profession, Janie?
Well, when I went into out of high school, let's just say in high school, I had so many friends that would come to me and they would tease me saying, you know everything, so tell me this, tell me that. And that was how it was always played. It was not your clairvoyant. That word wasn't even like we weren't even using that word back then.
Uh-huh.
And so I really started to understand how helpful it could be. And then when I got into more into the 20s and 30s, I really started paying more attention to allowing myself the time to help more people. And as I did that, the readings started to grow and the word started to spread. And the next thing you know, I'm getting phone calls, can you help me? Can you help me? And so it really evolved from the recognition of how helpful it would calm the minds of people who had lost someone and didn't get to say, their last things they wanted to say. Or it would bring understanding to people who didn't understand how their loved one died. Nobody knew how she died. She just died. What happened? That type of thing. And I say that because, I've had a lot of circumstances where a spouse has passed away and the person left on earth has a real tough time moving forward. And then when the spouse comes through to relieve them and give them permission to move on in their life, then suddenly the person here on earth wakes up again. And for me to be able to see those types of transitions and changes in human behavior as a result of me connecting, it just continues to inspire me to stay in the field, to stay doing what I'm doing and help connect as many people as I can.
You have a very special designation as a 5C clairvoyant. What is that?
I do. Well, what that means is that I have 5 specific senses that are on very high alert, and I am able to channel and connect with spirit using a lot of my senses, being the clairvoyant vision, meaning that I get extra sensations within, but I also can hear very clearly who is talking to me from the other side. I get a clear taste in my mouth, as in I can taste different things that they want me to taste. I have clear sensations of my feelings. I can feel other people's body sensations within me if they're trying to explain something that they might have experienced. And I have the ability to smell things that they want me to smell from the other side. So all 5 of my senses are working overtime, if you will.
Wait, Janie, it doesn't matter who you are. All of us have very particular likes and dislikes when it comes especially to the senses of taste and smell. Do they ever run something by you that you just say, oh, what is that?
Absolutely. I was doing a radio interview and a gentleman from Europe phoned in and he was looking for a recipe that he wanted to pass down to the generations below him. And it was a recipe for cow spleen. And as I was getting the recipe from his relative, I was getting the taste in my mouth as it was cooking. And I couldn't get that out of my mouth for an hour. And it was not something I would ever order, hope I never have to taste again. It was just not something that was working for me. And he was so delighted to be able to make that for his children. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, your poor children.
Those poor kids. That's truly where there's a crossover between those two words, awful and awful.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Now, do you actually see things too? What sort of visions do you have?
I see photos a lot. Like I see pictures. I had someone that was wanting to connect to a person and she didn't give me any of the details. And I said, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a cliff and I'm seeing you standing on the cliff and there is a beautiful orange sunset, like really bright, vibrant orange, and you're throwing something into the water. And so I saw literally what looked like a painting that way. And what she had said to me is, yes, I was in Spain on a vacation and I threw a love note in a bottle to him and threw it out to sea. So I saw it in the form of a painting to describe to her what I was seeing.
Do the spirits actually give you recipes?
Yes, and that is so much fun. that started with my mom looking for recipes through my grandmother. And I said, well, let's see if I can connect to her. Maybe she can give us the recipe. My mom realized that none of her five siblings had gotten a specific recipe that they all loved as a kid. So that worked out really well. And so I started to ask for recipes for a variety of different friends and people that were coming to me going, hey, can you get this from my great-grandmother and this and that? And now people will call me and say things like, I've been trying to make my my aunt's potato salad, and I thought I knew how to do it, but something's not right. And then I'll connect with the auntie, and she'll say, oh, you're missing the garlic powder or something like that. And so I've been able to help people find their missing ingredients or actually walk them through how to make the things that they're trying to make. And basically, it's I hear the instructions and I see visually the little mini video of how to make it as we're going along. So it's real clear and it's real, real simple for the person that's on Earth to follow it.
Have you been collecting these recipes? Are you writing them down and keeping them?
I have, actually, and I've created a cookbook, and it is recipes from the other side. It's recipes that I've channeled. I was so inspired to do that because I've tried so many of these recipes, and they're so much fun because they're old recipes. So it's not things that you hear about on these cooking shows today. It's not things that you see online. It's old, sacred, beautiful, ancestral, you know, mealtime recipes when meals were so much more meaningful, when family sitting around the table was so much more meaningful. So what I've done is I've put the recipes down, but I also put a little information on who it came from and how they felt about cooking that recipe and when they used it, what it was for. Was it for a special occasion? Was it a once-a-week dinner? You know, what was it about? Because I felt like it would be fun for people to see not only this old-time recipe, but how it was felt by the person on the other side.
Janie, thank you so much for sharing your amazing story with us. And we hope to talk to you again soon on Louisiana Eats.
Thank you, Poppy. It's been such a pleasure hanging out with you guys today.
That was Janie Beauclair, the clairvoyant gourmet.
Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen.
In his spare time, Josh Beckerman is a food enthusiast and blogger living in New York City. But for his day job, Josh is a master at the art of illusion. The self-styled foodie magician and comedian shows off his sleight of hand at restaurants and events across the country, all with a food twist. According to the New York Times, go out often enough and the foodie magician will materialize at the end of your table. So now, through the magic of radio, the foodie magician's going to materialize for us on Louisiana Eats.
My shows, Poppy, are about entertainment and connection. Everybody in the universe is connected. We're all connected. We're here right now. You, me, Poppy, Joe, your sound guy. Are you ready for a trick?
I'm ready.
Good. So do you have a bill on you, Pops?
I'm a girl. I don't have a wallet.
Does anyone in the room? Whoa.
Oh.
Here's your assistant. Joey comes through. This is a $10 bill. Can you fold the bill in your hand? I don't want anyone to see it but you. And what kind of phone do you have, Poppy?
I have an iPhone.
Take out your iPhone and go into the calculator, please.
Okay.
Now, Joe, when is your birthday?
August 2nd.
August 2nd is your birthday. So into Poppy's calculator. Well, for a phone, I want you to put 802. Go ahead.
All right.
Good. Poppy, I want you to hit the multiply sign. Just hit multiply.
Multiply.
Right. And then put any random three-digit number that only you know. Only any random three-digit number. And don't tell Joe, but can you see the total on the calculator? Don't say it. Can you see it? It's a big total, right?
It's a big total.
Joe, in your hand is a bill that you just took out, right? It's right. Folded up in your hand. What was the denomination? A 5 or a 10?
10.
Look at the serial. Every bill in the world has a unique serial number. Look at the serial number of the bill. Okay? And what's the first number?
9.
Okay, what's next?
3.
Next?
5.
Next?
3.
Yeah?
2, 8,
248.
Can you tell the audience what's the number on the calculator now?
9353248. You're scaring me, Josh.
Poppy, the numbers that you guys just multiplied equaled the serial number of the bill that Joe just took out from his pocket. You guys are getting foodie magished. Unbelievable. Magic.
Okay, now, where's the food come in, Josh?
Well, I usually make food disappear all day. That's my big trick. And I just made a clam pie disappear from Domenica Restaurant, which was amazing. Chef Alon Shia and Chef John Bash, you guys are killing it. All right, so let me try this. I see you have your phone out there.
Yes.
Go into the contacts of your phone.
Okay, I'm there.
Great. You're going to take the phone. You're going to hold it upside down. You're not going to look. Okay. You're going to start scrolling. You can go one way, the other way. Start scrolling.
Okay.
And select a name. So you selected a name at random from your phone. Do you know this person?
Yes.
I have a lot of random people on my phone. I want you to think about this person in your mind, okay? Don't say a thing. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Number one is, when was the last time you saw this person?
3 years ago,
okay. Does our friend Joe here know this person, yes or no?
No.
No, okay. And is this someone you know through work?
No.
No. How do you know this person?
Family.
A family member? Is this a cousin of yours?
It's a cousin-in-law.
A cousin-in-law. How would I know that? Could it have been your uncle? I'm killing it. So you right now, you're thinking of, in your mind, a person you just chose randomly from your phone. You haven't seen this person in 3 years. It's a cousin-in-law. And this is crazy. I do mind reading around the world. Poppy, are you thinking of a male?
Yes.
Oh, my God. How did I know that? Mentalist. No, wait. That's not the trick. That's my big 50-50 joke. Here's the thing. Poppy, Joe, what you guys don't know is, before I was here, I was eating a clam pie at Domenica Restaurant. It was amazing. I paid the bill, and I was thinking about the pie. I was like, wow, that pie was amazing. I had fried Tuscan kale. It was delicious. And all of a sudden, I had a vision of a name. I had a vision of a name an hour ago. I was like, wow, I got to write this down. I took out my wallet. I took out a business card. I wrote down one name in the back of one card and put it in my wallet an hour ago. Poppy, we met for the first time today. I've never touched your phone. You could have chosen anyone right now, but right now you're thinking of your cousin-in-law. It's a male. I'm going to have Joe. Joe, and tell the audience what's going on. Joe, in my wallet is
okay.
A card.
So he pulls out his wallet. He pulls out a card.
Joe took out a card.
He's got the card. Joe's got the card.
Is there a name in the back? Yes or no?
There is a name in the back.
Yeah. What's the name of the person you're thinking of? Say it out loud so the audience hears.
Ryan Furby.
What does the card say, Joe? Say it out loud.
Ryan Furby.
What does that say? What does it say in the back? It says Ryan Furby. The name of your cousin-in-law was written on the back of my card that I wrote back an hour ago because I had a vision because that clam pie was so good. It gave me visions.
Okay, you're freaking me out. I got to tell you the truth. You're freaking me out.
Awesome.
Okay. What's your best shot, baby?
My best shot? Maybe Jameson or Johnny Walker Black? What? You mean best trick? You mean, like, the tricks I've done so far aren't that amazing?
They are amazing. You're, like, batting 1,000. Wait.
If that's Ryan Furby at the door, I'm going back to New York, and I'm crying forever.
No, wait. Here. We're going to have a special appearance on the radio now. Madeline Mulladew, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mama. Thank you.
Mama? Is that your daughter?
That's my daughter.
Oh, my God. I feel like a part of the family. This is amazing.
What's your number?
You asked me before your daughter walked in about my favorite best shot, and my best shot I was about to do, and I had no idea that your beautiful daughter was going to walk in. Here she comes in like a little angel flying in,
and she's kind of magic, isn't she?
She's kind of magic. But my best shot is really the true form of connection. And then Joe and Poppy, I want you to watch this because here's the thing. Your name is Madeline.
Yes.
Oh, my God. How would I know that? Mentalist. And I heard Poppy say it 30 seconds ago. Stand up, Madeline. Stand up. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to take my business card, okay? Poppy and Joe, I'm taking the business card. I'm going to touch Madeline. I'm going to touch you with the card, okay?
Be careful with that.
I am. Madeline's eyes are going to be closed. Not yet. Madeline, you will be aware of every touch, every sensation. The only thing is your eyes are closed, okay? Madeline, open your eyes for a second. 1, 2, 3. Close your eyes. Are your eyes closed?
Yes.
Okay, so listeners... Right now, Madeline's eyes are closed. I'm going to take the card, okay? I'm going to touch you with the card. The question is this. Madeline, did you feel a touch?
Yes.
Where?
On my nose.
Yes, I touched your nose. Good. Keep your eyes shut. Can you hear my voice? Yeah. I have one question. Madeline, you felt a touch?
Yes.
Where?
Above my eyebrow.
Yeah. Ooh, Poppy's laughing. Keep your eyes shut. Can you hear my voice, yes or no?
Yes.
I have a question. Did you feel a tickle?
Yes.
Where?
Under my chin.
Okay. Your eyes are definitely shut, right?
Yes.
I have a question. Did you feel a touch?
No.
Oh, good, good, good. Open your eyes. Stop. Now, Poppy,
yes.
Your listeners are listening and you couldn't see what just happened, but you and Joe saw. Can you tell Madeline and your audience what just happened?
Yes. When she felt her nose being rubbed, you were doing that to my nose. When she felt her chin being rubbed, it was forehead being rubbed.
Did I touch Madeline at all?
No, never touched
I was touching
Madeline
you and Joe the entire
all.
Time. I
you
touched you guys
Madeline?
The entire time.
You're joking.
No, I didn't touch you at all. I was touching you, Poppy. I touched Joe. You felt the connection. You felt the sensation.
So
you guys
weird.
Are getting foodie magish. This is unbelievable. I need more to drink.
Josh Beckerman, foodie magician.
Black magic. Black magic.
You used black magic when you took hold of me. You told me that your love was true, but all the time you were casting up hoodoo black magic. Will you ever let me? Will you ever set me free? Black magic.
What do fish have to do with April Fool's Day? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
But I know you use the mojo hand with powers to hoodoo a mojo man. Black magic. Will you ever let me? Will you ever set me free? Hocus pocus and my love was just for you. Alakazam, now you leave me feeling blue.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold.
Come, be my April. Come, you're the only one.
Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What do fish have to do with April Fool's Day? Since the 19th century, the French have observed something they call Poisson d'Avril, or April Fish. The tradition involved trying to secretly attach a paper fish to someone's back so they would go through the day unwittingly sporting an April fish. Eventually, the tradition evolved to include the sending of Poisson d'Avril greeting cards. Victorian men, women, and children were depicted on the cards, along with surreal images of fish. At one time, I became so captivated by the images that I amassed a pretty amazing collection of them. Curious to see them? Just visit poppytooker.com, where some of my favorites are featured in a Poisson d'Avril celebration. You'll love the way the French celebrate the Day of Hilaria. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. If you're looking to visit the hottest restaurants in New Orleans, you'd be wise to talk to Kevin Allman, editor of Gambit magazine. We recently spoke with Kevin about one of the newest, trendiest restaurants in the Bywater that you've probably never heard of. Kevin, I am so happy that I was able to get you to sit down with us and share some really amazing restaurant scoop that you've got for us. Something new in the New Orleans Bywater scene.
In the Bywater, yeah.
And God knows the Bywater scene. Everything down there is like
growing by leaps and bounds. I can hardly keep up. Can you?
No, because if you haven't been down there for a week, there's going to be something different, whether it's going to be a new restaurant, a new chef, a new menu, something like that going on. And with the influx of all the new people that have come here since the storm, that seems to be a place that a lot of them have settled. Some of them are really riffing on our tradition. Some of them have brought in their own traditions. But I think most of them are trying to combine the two. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's always interesting.
Well, you guys at Gambit always have the scoop. So what's new, Kevin?
Well, we just ran a review of a new restaurant. It's called No. It's pronounced No, but it's actually spelled, and this is all lowercase, N:EAUX. So it's like O, water, but it's No. And the first No that comes at No is that you can't make a reservation there.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, no, this is different than that. It's not, you don't wait in line. If you want to eat there, they make the reservation with you. You go online and you fill out this web form and it asks you a few questions and you put in your credit card number and links to your Twitter and your Tumblr and your social media accounts and they look it over. I don't know what criteria they use to decide how cool you are, but if they like it, then they'll text you back the time and the date that they will seat you. And then from there, you have to actually download a smartphone app, and they have it for iPhone or Android, and that app is going to be an integral part of your dining experience while you're at No.
Wow. You have to really, really, really want to eat there, I suppose, to put up with all this. But I'm game. I'm always game for what's new. So you get lucky enough to make the cut, and they tell you when to be there and where to go.
Right. Right. And you download the app, which has your menu on it, and you go in, and you don't go to the dining room first, even if you've got a reservation. You go into the bar, and the bar is pitch black.
No, I've been in some dark bars.
No, this is like blackout curtains. This is like World War II blackout.
Okay.
And you are not allowed to speak because they want everyone to really experience the drinks themselves. So you can't see the drinks. You're not talking to the people that you're with. These things are just put in your hand. And they've got a pretty amazing drinks program. They have something called a Ramazarak French 75, which is a hybrid. It's got whiskey, gin, champagne, Morgan City Farms lemon juice, and the white of an egg from a Marigny free-range chicken. There's also something called an English turnip for what, and that's kind of a dealer's choice thing. All they'll tell you is that every week that it's going to be Mississippi River forward, and I'm not quite sure what that means as far as tasting goes.
Is it brown?
I don't know, because it's dark in there. You can't see what you're drinking. But the drinks, they're in these big, giant kind of igloo coolers, and they pour them into red Solo cups with poetry written on the side, which you can read when you go into the dining room. And this is new. They actually have an artisanal ice menu at this place. And that's part of what you download on your app. So you can select the kind of ice cubes you want, if you want smoked ice or if you want chipped ice and all this. And the ice cubes range from $1 to $5 a piece.
You pay extra for ice cubes?
Well, it's an ingredient in the drink, as they've told me.
Okay.
And you pay for the ingredients that you're eating. You know, it's not like, it's not just like some piece of ice that you get out of a
you're
machine.
Right.
These are special.
Right. So I'm sorry.
And then you're taking it into the restaurant itself. Which is this long, 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 like football field size long table with just one person on each side. So it is communal dining, basically, but for hundreds, hundreds of people. And you're not allowed to sit with the people that you came with because they want to encourage, as they say, community. People from Brooklyn and Portland are really big on community and all of that. Also, to build community, they don't have enough utensils for everyone. And that's by design.
Okay.
And there aren't traditional servers either. So as I said, they decide what you're going to eat. And when your meal is ready, your app buzzes in your pocket like you might get the buzzer at Zia's or something like that when the food's ready. And you walk into the kitchen and they call it foraging. There's a bunch of food out there and you have to find what you've ordered. And it's just like, you know, foraging, which is a term that we've all come to know since the storm.
This takes it to a new level.
If you happen to be picking up an order or you see someone picking up an order that looks good, in order to build more community, you offer to exchange bites of your food and all of this stuff. So they really want to get people talking in the kitchen. And I think it cuts down on labor costs too.
So what's the food like, this precious food?
The food, it varies from time to time. I've only been lucky enough to get in there once. So, I mean, you might talk to Ian McNulty or Brett Anderson because I think they've been there a lot more often than I have.
Okay.
But they don't divide it into entrees and mains and things like that. They have things they call excitements, amusements, and distractions.
Distractions?
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the difference between any of them are, frankly. But
were you distracted?
I was definitely distracted. The night I went, I had you know what tofurkey is, right?
Of
it's like
course.
Turkey, but it's made out of tofu. Yes. And pork belly is really hot. So they had a tofurkey belly sandwich.
Oh.
And it was finished in a reduction of pineapple Big Shot and Pabst Blue Ribbon. And they served it like a banh mi, which is very popular these days, as we all know.
Of course.
And then the sandwich itself was crusted with Roman candy from the Roman Candy Man and Zapp's chips. So it was very local.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They also had what they call the deconstructed shrimp po' boy, which is kind of like spa cuisine. And it was a single breaded shrimp on this huge, huge square plate with a smear of Creole tomato jam and what they called Bogalusa Farms iceberg lettuce foam. So I guess you dip the shrimp in the tomato jam and then the iceberg lettuce foam.
Okay.
And, of course, kale, you know, is huge, huge, huge these days. And I did not try this because I don't care for kale.
Uh-huh.
And I don't care for people who care for kale. But their most popular dish, and I think it's on the menu just about every night, is called the Flight of Six Kales. And it's kale prepared five different ways, but it's served on an edible plank actually made out of kale.
I'd like to see that.
It's a very smooth experience at the end, too. I mean, we're all used to Uber now and things like that where you just get out of the car and you don't have to pay anyone. You don't have to pay when you leave here because you've already arranged that when you get there. So when you're finished, you just walk out and catch your Uber or whatever you're going to do. And the app that you downloaded on your phone automatically deducts the cost of your meal. And if you have Bitcoin, it takes it out of your Bitcoin account.
Okay.
It adds a 35% tip, which I guess is standard for them. And
wow.
It sends all the images of everything you've eaten to your Instagram and Snapchat accounts. And then it leaves the restaurant a 5-star Yelp review, so you don't even have to worry about doing that.
Well, that's a little nervy.
Well, that's you know, I guess
the future, huh?
That's the future. That's the future. So, yeah, that's no. And
okay. Well, I'm going to get back with you about this, Kevin.
Well,
they'll let me in.
Well, they don't have a listed phone number and they don't have a listed address. That's the tough part. So you've just got to go online and maybe Google it or maybe go to Yelp and see if you can find someone who's been lucky enough to get in there and experience all this.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Poppy, for having us.
That's Kevin Allman of Gambit Magazine with the scoop on one of the Bywater's newest restaurants. No.
Tell her no, 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 no.
Okay, as we said at the start of the show, one of these stories is just a little too fishy to be believed. Did you spot our April Fool's joke? If you haven't already guessed, we saved the April Fool for last. The restaurant, No, exists only in Kevin Allman's imagination. But who knows? Maybe the trend of drinking quietly in a pitch-dark room will catch on. I'm Poppy Tooker, and this is Louisiana Eats.
We don't get fooled again. No, no.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we speak with Damian Mogavro, the tech wizard who unravels the threads of what it really takes to make a food and beverage operation profitable.
Our dining experience is being transformed by two big things. First, embracing data and technology. And second, it's the adaptation of trends from the foodie generation.
Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and take us with you wherever you go. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, and by Dickie Brennan's Bourbon House, from oysters to redfish, serving fresh Gulf seafood on Bourbon Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum,
Or check out what we're up to at poppytooker.com. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.